sure it's working in such horrible quickie system. We're okay now. Right, topic today is the development of the object concept. Development of an understanding of object permanence. We're going to look at strictly gadget views, and then we're going to look at a whole range of much more recent research that really challenges Piaget's claim. So, what are you going to learn about today? We're going to learn about, I was going to say an American researcher. In fact, she's Canadian, but she's been working at the University of Illinois for over 20 years now. Renee Biagio. No penalties for misspelling her name in exams, okay? It's a bugger, but never mind. René Biagio, key researcher, very important person to know about. And we're going to look at her research on the very early development of object knowledge and object permanence. We're also going to look at a method, a new research paradigm that she's developed called the violation of expectation paradigm. I'm going to tell you how we can use that to study object knowledge in very young babies, babies who are too young to reach out and pick things up, so they can't search for objects. So that's a very important paradigm. And I'm going to describe three of the key studies that appear in all the textbooks, the Gromit study, the RAM study, and the Rabbit study. Okay? And then I'm going to look at a recent work by another American researcher, Karen Wynn, who argues that infants have an early concept of numerosity, in particular can do arithmetic. They can add up and subtract. And we're going to see if her claims also add up or not. And then finally, we're actually going to talk about one of the research we did here, which provides very convincing evidence in young infants who nevertheless can reach out and grasp things, that they do remember the existence of hidden objects, even though they can't pick up covers and search for them. And we have an explanation for why we think there's that discrepancy. Well, here's Piaget's view. I've shown you this before. This is a quote from his 1954, that's the date of translation, his 1954 book, The Construction of Reality. Fascinating book. And he argues that the object is a mere image that re-enters the void as soon as it vanishes and emerges from it for no objective reason. So he's arguing that babies have very little knowledge, in fact no understanding, no concept of the permanence of the world around them. It depends entirely on their own perception and action. And there's René Biagio. And René, like Mrs. Belke, takes a completely different standpoint. She makes these important points. When you consider our understanding of the physical world, we as adults make three important assumptions when things disappear from view, when they get hidden, occlusion events. That an object that's occluded continues to exist. Okay? So if I drop a cover over a toy, you assume it continues to exist. It doesn't go out of existence just because you can't see it. Second assumption we make is that when it's hidden, when it's gone out of sight, it retains its spatial and physical properties. So just because an object is hidden from view doesn't mean to say it suddenly takes on magical, mystical properties. Okay? Just because we're thinking about it, we have a representation of it, doesn't mean to say that it can suddenly become transparent, or it can move from one place to another without somebody transporting it. It doesn't acquire new properties just because it goes out of sight. And thirdly, it remains subject to physical law. So if it's solid, it remains solid. Okay? Gravity will still continue to operate. Just because it's gone out of sight and we're thinking about it with a mental representation doesn't mean to say the object out there has changed its properties. So these are three important characteristics of our understanding of the world when things go out of view. And Biagio wants to argue, contrary to Piaget, young babies, as young as 2-3 months of age, also make exactly the same assumptions. And her research program has been designed to provide evidence to back up each of these claims. Now, how can you set about studying babies as young as two, three months, if they can't reach out and handle objects, they can't search for hidden objects. See, when babies start to search, that suggests that they're beginning to get some understanding that objects continue to exist. Well, my idea is that we adapt some of the visual looking methods that I've been talking about in the last lectures to answer these profound questions, to come up with clear answers about what babies remember, what they can represent, and what they know, what their physical knowledge might be. And she's developed what she calls the violation of expectation paradigm. The idea here is it's a method of studying young infants who can't reach out and handle objects. And in the general run of things, the general scheme, you take a physical object, baby's looking at, they may be hadn't allowed to handle it, so they know some of its properties, and then you hide it somewhere, go to the street. Now that's important, it's out of sight. Okay? And biologists claim the baby can still remember its existence. But Piaget, out of sight is out of mind, biologist, the baby could still have a representation of this hidden object. Then she makes something happen behind the screen involving the object, outside of the baby. And that event can be either physically possible or physically impossible. For example, imagine a solid block which is then screened, and then a stick that comes in from the side and apparently passes right through it. Okay? That would be a physically impossible event. But for a baby who doesn't have a permanent object concept, that baby wouldn't notice anything odd happening at all because it doesn't know about the existence of the block behind the screen. Just be watching the movement, not the scene. So Biologist's idea is we can show babies physically possible, physically impossible events. On the surface, we try to make them look as similar as possible, so they're indistinguishable on the surface. All that's different is whether one could happen or one can't, but it violates physical laws. And we measure the time babies spend looking at these events. Okay? And if they have some understanding of the physical properties, if they have this knowledge, and they can remember the existence of the hidden object, they should be surprised at the impossible event and should look longer. Okay? And we can measure that very easily. So the kids don't have to do anything, just sit there and watch these interesting events unfold. And from their looking times, if we see a difference, longer looking at the impossible event, we can conclude they know something about what's going on. They have some understanding about why it's impossible. And they also must have a representation of the object. Okay? You see the reasoning there? It's very clever. It's a very nice idea. Maybe let me just give you an instance, a demonstration of this methodology, just to make sure you've got it clear in your mind, because it's crucial that you understand what happens. Now, what I've got here is a tube, okay, with a hole running through it. I have this some pointy stick. It's solid. It's solid as well. Now what I'm going to do is slip this over my arm. Now, an explosion event. My arm is still there. You see my fingers, see my elbow, but you can't see my forearm, but you know it's there, okay? You've got a permanent object concept. Right. Now, I'm going to demonstrate a physically impossible, sorry, a physically possible event. What I'm going to do is pass the stick behind the tube so it comes out on the other side. I'll withdraw it, and I can push it back again. So it goes out of view, okay? Watch that. There's no violation of any physical principle, nothing getting in the way to the motion of the stick. Yeah, you know what's coming up, don't you? So, not a very exciting event, but let me show you a physically impossible event. Solid object isn't in view. Now, if I push the stick into the hole, and I'm just going to stop talking, I need to concentrate here. Very good. Okay, right. Physically impossible event. There's a hidden object, you know it's there, and one solid object has apparently passed through another solid object. Okay, let me just take that. Good. Right, now, see you look longer at the impossible event than the possible one. You found it more interesting. Why? Because you have a representation of my hidden arm. You know it continues to exist, so that's one piece of information we get from this paradigm. Second, you know about the properties of solid objects. One solid object shouldn't pass through another one. And you know, you make that assumption that even though my arm has been occluded, it's hidden, it still retains its physical properties. They don't suddenly change in a magical way. Okay? So, that is a nice little demonstration of the violation of expectation paradigm. You had an expectation that should have been able to pass and stick through, and I violated that expectation. You found it interesting, and you found it interesting because you have these abilities and you have this knowledge. Okay, we can do the same with young infants. And here is the very first study that Biagio completed. This is part of her PhD. And it had a huge impact when it was first published. Because suddenly he realized he had a way of exploring these early abilities where we have no hands on it previously. This is the drawbridge study. And you're looking at it sideways on. The baby is looking face on. And what happens is the infant is habituated to this stream that's moving to and fro. It's rotating 180 degrees. Okay? And then it's not like being a little laptop. So it's light flash coming up and then light back again, moving to and fro. And we show the baby this event until, of a series of trials, infants habituate. They're familiarized with it. Infant control procedure. You know what that means. Okay? Then we show them two test events. We show them one at a time, we randomize the order across the group of babies. One is physically possible, the other is physically impossible. Here's the possible event. A solid block is set down on the stage, the screen moves up, hides it from view, so no longer the baby can no longer see it, and then the screen collides with the block, see here, and moves back down again. Okay, so we just repeat this event, measure how long it holds the baby's attention, and when the baby looks away for 2 seconds, that's it. We measure the looking time. Here is an impossible event. Exactly the same screen, same block, but once the block is hidden, the screen carries on moving. Apparently passes through this object. Now, if babies know the object is still there, and they know it's solid, and they know it doesn't change its properties, even though it's been hidden, they should be pretty surprised at this impossible event. It shouldn't happen. If I'd set that up here in front of you, you would be impressed, I guarantee it. So the question is, are 3, 4, 5-month-old babies impressed? And the answer is, yes, they are. Habituate them, we show them the impossible event, we show them the possible event, we measure the time they spend looking at these two test events, and it turns out, in numerous studies, infants look significantly longer at the impossible event compared to the possible one. They had an expectation to be violated. It's clear evidence, according to Biagio, that 5-month-old infants could remember the existence of the hidden object, knew about its properties, and was surprised when solid screen apparently passed all the way through. Suggests that they remembered it was there, they knew the screen should have stopped. So, this is the main experiment here, these results, you can see the habituation initially, and then longer looking on 3 pairs of test trials of the impossible event compared to the possible one. That had a huge impact. That study was phenomenal. People suddenly realized this was the way to get interesting answers from babies too young to do anything else but sit and look at events. And there was a whole flurry of research, and it's been going on, still continues. However, although this study got into all the textbooks, and you can read about it in the references that I've given you, unfortunately, Biagio made a mistake with the design of this first study. When you're measuring looking times, you have to be very careful that there are no other low-level differences between the two events which might explain longer looking at one compared to the other. You need to make them on the surface look exactly the same, So that the only reason for the difference is that the baby remembers the existence of the object and detects the violation. Otherwise, the study is ambiguous. You can't draw any clear conclusions. And with the drawbridge study, there is two or three alternative explanations. Let me just show you a couple of them. These are examined in a more recent study by Susan Rivera and her colleagues, who claim that there are simple perceptual explanations for these differences. Here's one. If you think about the two events, the possible, the impossible is more complex. There are more things changing in front of the baby. So it may just be intrinsically more interesting. The kid may not know anything about the existence of the object once the screen has come up, but the event just looks more interesting. So, if you think about the possible effect, what the baby is seeing is object, screen, object, screen, object, screen, splitting between these two displays. The screen goes up and goes back. With the impossible event, it's a little more complex. The baby sees the object, the screen, and then no object. And then the screen, and then the object again. Object, screen, no object. Okay? So there's more going on here. And it may be that's what's holding their attention for a longer time. However, there's an even simpler explanation. And that is that when you move the screen 180 degrees, there's more movement and it takes longer to complete that movement than it does to move the screen up to about 110 degrees and then move it down here. So the impossible event, although it's impossible, physically impossible, also lasts longer and there's more movement, and that makes attracting infant's attention. And so to test that claim, this is what Rivera did. First of all, she replicated Biarjon's experiment exactly. Okay, she set up all the conditions the same way, same material, same signs of objects, and so on. And the results came out exactly the same. So there's not a problem replicating the results. The problem is interpreting them. So here we have the impossible event, here we have the possible, and significantly longer looking at the impossible event. Fine, so that's the first step. So the results can be replicated. Now, she repeated the experiment, but with one crucial difference. There was no block behind the screen. She just took it away completely. So now all the baby can see is a screen moving up to 150 degrees and moving down again, or 180 degrees. Okay? And lo and behold, she's getting exactly the same results. Longer looking, and the 180 degree movement compared to the 110 degree. But there's no question of an impossible event. There's nothing behind the screen. There was nothing there to stop it moving. So what we can conclude is that when screens move for a greater distance, there's more movement, babies look longer. That's the simple interpretation of this pioneering study. That result could be based on detection of impossibility, but we cannot rule out a simpler, low-level explanation. So, unfortunately, this classic study is flawed, and we can't draw any conclusions. But that doesn't mean to say the whole idea is flawed. We have plenty other evidence to support Biarjon's claims, and there are other studies that look much better because they've been designed much better. And here is one. This is the rat study. This study has been replicated many times, and it avoids these pitfalls of the very first drawbridge study. I'll just take you through the events. What the baby sees is a screen here, which is red, okay? Light behind it, the screen is lowered, and then the car is put on its ramp, and it rolls down across this track and comes out on the other side. It goes behind the screen, comes out, okay? So if it's the first habituated and familiarized to that sequence of events. So they get familiar with what's going to happen in front of them. They're not going to get suddenly surprised when a hand appears and drops the car on the ground and off it goes. So they familiarize them with the general procedure. Okay? And then they see these two test events. This is called an off-track event. It's the possible event. Screen goes up, and what the baby sees is a solid block, one they've actually been handling just a moment ago. It's a solid block, and it's set right at the back of the stage. It's not on this track. Screen goes down, truck appears, rolls behind the screen, comes out the other side, just as it did previously. No problem with that, there's nothing to stop it moving. Okay? And here is what they call the on-track, the impossible event, exactly the same. Screen is raised, but this time the block is seen resting on the tray. Okay? Screen goes down, so now maybe just remember it's there. Chop appears, and it does exactly what it did in the other two conditions. It goes behind the screen, comes out on the other side. Okay? Now that shouldn't happen. There's a solid object behind the screen. If babies are, as Piaget claims, outside of mind, once that screen comes down, these events look exactly the same. On the surface, they're exactly the same. The same amount of movement. Don't know those problems we had in the study. Babies should look equally at these two events, because they're interesting. But they can't remember the existence of the block, and don't know about the spot. But it turns out it's not the case. Babies look longer, the Bible calls, they look significantly longer at the impossible event. Even though on the surface, the appearance is exactly the same. Three pairs of test trials, three difference here, people looking here, but we're back to three difference. So all very significant results. So this is powerful evidence that when you take care to make the events look exactly the same on the surface, these micron holes remember the existence of the hidden block, knew about its properties, and were surprised when these properties followed their expectation was violated. So that's a very striking experiment. It's been repeatedly tried to cut by our numbers. You never show that infants as young as 3 months can detect the impossible event. And we can go even lower. We can go down to 2 months of age. And Selke, one of her famous studies, demonstrated this. And these are the events that the babies watched. The screen comes down. You see there's a wall at the end here. The ball rolls behind the screen and stops at the wall. Just look at that 2 or 3 times. Nothing impossible about this. Physically possible. So we show 2-month-olds this sequence of events unfolding. And then we get the 2 test events. Here's the first. People are consistent. This is the physically possible. A second wall appears. They stick up above the screen, so the baby is reminded of them. The ball goes behind, okay, and stops, obviously, at the first wall it encounters. So physically possible. Here, on the surface, an identical event. The wall comes down, the screen comes down, the ball goes behind, but look where it ends up. It's here. It's apparently and mysteriously passed through this solid wall to end up in this final position. And it's obeyed physical laws. It hasn't suddenly of its own accord sort of left around behind the screen to get into that position. It's carried on moving on its track. Somehow it ended up here. And it turns out that when you record looking times, here we get the habituation in these 2-month-olds. High level of interest, and then they habituate these criteria. And we show them the 2 test events significantly longer looking at the inconsistent and possible event compared to the consistent one. Although on the surface they look exactly the same, these 2-month-olds are noticing the difference. Yes, the question. It's all invisible. You can't see anything at all. In fact, you can present these tasks using video displays on a computer screen, where the whole thing is animated like this. It's just trickery. But it's done, these were real physical objects, and it's done with a little bit of trickery. It's something behind a screen. I'll show you another example in the video clip in a moment, which will give you an idea. So they are being manipulated, but there's a lot of care taken to make sure there are no sound clues, there are no timing differences. Spelke is very, very careful about ensuring there are no low-level differences, which might, for some reason, attract more attention from the babies. But as I said, you can present the task using two-dimensional displays, animated displays on the computer, to get exactly the same results. So we can avoid those things. So we've got good evidence now that babies as young as 2 months can form mental representations, They may be simple, but they can form them. They can remember the existence of objects that go out of sight, and they know something about their physical properties, that they are solid, and one solid object shouldn't pass through another. Here's another classic study called the rabbit character study for various reasons. Partly because they use these toy rabbits initially, and then they switch to carrots. There's a story behind that, but we don't need to go into the details. And you can see this some guy's on the face, looking at the child, and we've got here a screen, and the rabbit is going to have a little crow behind the screen. Okay? So it's going to be visible at the side, it's going to go out of view for a moment, and then it'll reappear. And we've got a short rabbit here, and a short rabbit here. So we can familiarize faces with these events. And if you think about it, although a tall rabbit and a short rabbit, what the kids are seeing is the same in the two effects. First you see the rabbit, then it goes out of sight, and then it reappears. Okay? Now here's the question. When it goes out of sight, do babies remember it exists? The answer would say no, they can't. They're sensory motor, out of sight, out of mind. By our models, claim they do remember its existence. How can we test for that? Well, we can show them, using violation of expectation, a possible event or an impossible event. Here's the possible event involving a little rabbit. We're going to cut a window out of the top of the screen. Okay? And now we show the little rabbit moving behind the screen, going out of view, coming back into view on the other side. In fact, the baby has seen exactly the same thing. It disappears from view and reappears. And now we show the impossible event. The tall rabbit goes behind the screen, but it doesn't appear in the window. It stays hidden, and then reappears at the correct moment on the opposite side of the screen. So, momentarily, it disappears. Okay? Now, Biogen argues, if babies think objects go out of existence, disappear into the void, as soon as they go out of sight, then these two events will look exactly the same on the surface. The rabbit disappears and reappears. Disappears and reappears. According to Piaget, infants shouldn't detect the impossibility here. They shouldn't expect to see it again. But in fact, it turns out, they do. Here's what the events look like. These were used at younger. For some reason, I don't know what's going on in Illinois. It's a strange place. There's a lot of corn they grow there. Yeah, you know. And apparently they tried to study the three-month-olds. They studied the five-month-olds, and they went down to three. And the three-month-olds got scared of the rabbits with faces. And they gave them carrots with faces. It's all there in the paper if you want to read about it. So there are the test events, okay? Here is the possible event. So you can see it's exactly the same as before. It goes out of view and comes back again. And here's the impossible event. It's out of view, stays out of view, and reappears. But it should appear in the window. But you only detect the impossibility if you have a permanent object concept. And I think it's a little bit tricky to understand. What you see here is the difference in looking times between the two events. So it's the impossible event. If you subtract the looking time of the possible event from the impossible, if the two events lasted the same, then all the scores would be zero. Okay? And certainly they're not zero. They're up this end of the scale. What this means is that these individual babies, these little dots, and the triangle is the mean score, these are two experiments, babies look longer at the impossible event. Maybe all of them, because there's only a couple there who are not, maybe one here. Very striking, very consistent result. Very strong evidence that infants do have this concept of permanence. They make predictions, they have expectations about what should happen, and they're surprised when they're violated. Now that result actually raises one interesting little question. Because not only was their expectation violated, but if you think about how the experiment is presented, your reaction, if you see that impossible event, you come away with a very strong impression that it's not just one rabbit there, there are two of them. One goes behind the screen, and there's another one on the other side all the while, which reappears, which is exactly how they set it up. So, is it just possible that there's a little bit more going on in this longer looking at the impossible event? Could it be these infants were also thinking, oh, wait a minute, there was one rabbit in all the other events, now there are two. Is it just possible? And do we have any evidence that infants, young infants, have some sense of number, of numerosity? Well, several researchers have argued that they do. This is one early study which shows that babies can begin to notice number of objects. It doesn't mean to say they can count, it doesn't mean to say they have mental symbols for numbers, but they certainly detect numerosity. So an habituation study done by Strauss and Curtis, what they did was they familiarized babies with a series of pictures in which you can see, here we've got cars, here we've got teddy bears, a whole load of different objects, okay? The shape, the colour, the size, the position, the density, the natural area, the amount of contour varies all the time from one stimulus to another. There's only one thing constant, and that's the number of objects. So here we can familiarise them with two objects on every display. Okay? And babies pretend, they process information. Now, here's the question. Are they picking up on the fact that there are two things on every single display? Well, we can test that very easily. We can show them another display with two objects that they haven't seen before, but the number is familiar, or we could show them a display which is unfamiliar, either more than two, in this case three, or less than two, just one. Okay? Both of these are normal. They've never seen these shapes before, but it turns out that around 10 months, infants can detect the change in number. We can discriminate 2 from 3 and 3 from 2. And, you'll be delighted to know, or some of you will, girls did a little better. They could discriminate at 10 months 3 from 4 and 4 from 3. For some reason, the boys took longer to achieve that. Interestingly, as soon as you compared 4 and 5 to 5 and 4, it broke down completely. Not a chance of spotting that difference. And that actually is a very consistent result. And it suggests they're not counting in some rudimentary way, but they do have some sensitivity to number, to numerosity, the number of things out there. Because there's no other clue that could explain this result. So they look longer at the novel number and look less at the familiar one. However, another researcher, American researcher Karen Wynn, argues that her research does provide evidence that infants have a concept of number, and more than that, they can manipulate numbers symbolically, mentally, and they can add up, and they can subtract, and they can do this at an age of 5 months. Just take it right in the flashback, I don't want to go. Here's Wynn's classic study, a very famous study, again it's in the Altman's text, it's in all the textbooks. It's maybe a little tall and indistinct, but if you print it out the notice, you can follow it through. You can certainly get this from Bjorkman's book. What he did was to show babies events unfolding in front of them, but some of it happened behind a screen. And one involved addition, and this is a test addition. So what the baby sees is this platform here, Harry comes in with Mickey Mouse, who's left on the platform, and then the screen comes up and hides him from view. So now everything is out of sight. A second Mickey appears and is taken behind the screen and the hand leaves empty. That is 1 plus 1 equals what? 3. That's her second experiment. If you read the paper, you'll see why. What we can now show is a possible outcome and an impossible outcome. We can show the correct outcome, 2 Mickeys, okay? And we can show an incorrect outcome, only 1 Mickey. So 1 plus 1 equals 2, correct. 1 plus 1 equals 1, incorrect. We can measure the looking times. Do babies detect the impossible outcome, the violation? Will they look longer at it? If they do, it's strong evidence, according to Wynn, that they have some early capacity to add up. We can just track them as well, just take it quickly through that. We can start with 2 Mickeys, we can hide them, we can then remove 1, and we can drop the flap to show 2 minus 1 equals 1, correct outcome. 2 minus 1 equals 2, incorrect outcome. Okay? Addition, subtraction. And I've got a video of it here. This is from Karen. And it shows the baby getting tested. I hope this is the right volume. It gives them that. And it'll give you an idea of the technique.
Your expectation. You would look longer, you'd be surprised, but you're not counting.
You're simply mentally working out what the appearance is going to be. And that is another alternative, simpler explanation for what's going on in this study. In fact, we think that's most likely what is happening. Nevertheless, Whelan's results are powerful evidence that babies as young as 5 months can form mental representations. They can figure out what something looks like behind the screen, even though they haven't seen it in its entirety. So they're not behaving as Piaget claimed they would. Whether they can count, we don't think they can at this age. But we don't think they're counting even at 12 and 18 months, although they are very sensitive to number. But very interesting study. And finally, study being completed, hearing and reading purposes, something I didn't produce. So this was his final honors dissertation. And he got very intrigued by trying to get evidence that young infants do have an object concept, but using a method in which they signal very clearly by reaching for a hidden object that they know continues to exist. Now, this involves 5-month-old babies. I've shown you some pictures of a 6-month-old who cannot search for a hidden object. He can't pick up a cover and find a toy that's leaking up in underneath it. 6-month-olds don't search. So these are younger, these are 5-month-olds. And I've argued for a long time that one of the problems may be at 6 and 5 months is that the babies know the toy is still there under the cover, but they haven't figured out exactly what they should do to get it back. They don't know how to work the cover. All they have to do is reach for it, pick it up, and it'll come back into view. Maybe that's what they have to learn over the next few months while they're playing with objects. If that was the problem, we have a very simple explanation for why they don't search. Yet, our conclusion would be different from Piaget's. The conclusion would be they do have a concept of object permanence. Now, how can we test that idea? Well, suppose we make a toy disappear in a way that doesn't require the baby to reach for cover in order to bring it back, to get hold of it again. And we can do that very simply by sitting a baby in a chair, putting a toy on the side, and then turning the lights out. So it disappears from view. Everything disappears from view. But the baby will still think it's there. And we know infants will move their arms, hands around in the dark, and in fact, will reach out in the dark. So if the baby reaches back to the place where they saw the toy, we have good evidence they remember it existed. And they don't have to search. They have this problem of removing a cover, which they don't yet know how to do. Okay. And that's our study. So, here's a baby, she's 5 months old, sitting in a chair. Mum's holding her hand so she can't reach too soon. The toy in the sink, trimmed here at the side, she's looking at it. And then we turn the lights up. There's an infrared system, we've got an infrared camera, infrared lighting, it's pitch black, nobody knows what's going on. Mum is still holding the baby's hand, so the baby can't reach too soon. Okay. You'll notice she's looked away. Most of the kids did that. They looked up to see where the lights had gone, because they'd just gone off. And, sneaky developmental psychologists, we've removed the toy. So there is nothing there for her to accidentally bump up against. Because the thing we don't want to happen is the baby just flails her arms around, knocks the toy, and then apparently reaches for it in the dark. Okay? There's nothing there. What happened? The babies we tested reached back to the place where they'd seen the toy. And in fact, she's looking, she's gazing in the same direction. They don't always do that. Sometimes they look in one direction, but they reach in the correct place. So we varied the position over a series of trials, and babies adjusted their reaching. They reached the left, reached the right, depending upon where they had seen the toy. So this is striking evidence of a primitive but definite permanent object concept. At 5 months, babies remember the existence of a toy, and will do something to get it back. They'll reach for it in the dark, but they don't have to remove the cover. So it's direct reaching, not figuring out how to solve the problem of getting a cover out of the way. By our conclusion, reviewing a whole range of first studies and other studies, including ours, is that these results suggest that young infants' understanding of inclusion events is strikingly similar to that of adults. We know the object continues to exist, so do babies. We know it retains its physical properties. So do vapors. They know about solidity. And we know that objects comply, still obey physical laws, and so do the vapors that objects behave in strange ways. So the elements do have representations. They include information about the existence of objects, spatial position, their properties, and movements, and they make inferences and engage in physical reasoning. Okay, we're going to stop. And I'll see you again next week on Monday. And just a reminder, Monday afternoon we've got a practice session. So I'll be giving you some data and discussing what's going on. So let's get some on to that.